hopefully he's there on the VIP line. So I'll let you know, this is Redwood Community Radio, KMED Garberville, KMUE Eureka, KILAI Laytonville, KMUD.org, where the views and opinions expressed throughout the broadcast day are those of the speaker and not necessarily those of the station and staff or underwriters, and where time is made available for all sorts of viewpoints, and we are very glad that you are listening to us. It's time for Ask Your Herb Doctor. And we have the doctors.
Well. Hi, thank you. Welcome to this month's Ask Your Herb Doctor. It's June 19th, 2020. My name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Johannesson Murray. Welcome.
For those of you, perhaps, who've never listened to the shows, which run every third Friday of the month from 7 till 8 p.m. With a live call-in from 7:30 to 8 o'clock, with callers calling about questions related or unrelated to the subject. Welcome to the show. We have Dr. Raymond Pete with us again, and it's the third discourse on the current prevalent thought amongst most people worldwide about COVID-19. Where is it? Where did it come from? How do people catch it? Is it that serious? Is it going to become a big problem? Why has it collapsed the economy worldwide? And lots of questions surrounding it. I'm afraid for those people who are anti-conspiracists, it certainly seems to have fuel behind it in terms of the facts and the science surrounding this virus and surrounding its lethality or not, and the responses worldwide of governments and the economic collapse that's had a severe impact for many economies around the world, not just good economies, but existing poor economies. So once again, we are joined by Dr. Raymond Pete, who's very much into the research of many different things and has been writing about health and writing about physiology and exposing the science, the science's sake, debunking a lot of popular belief, which has been repeated over the years and has become kind of entrenched in society and in the psyche. So once again, thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Pete.
Yep, thank you.
For people that have maybe never heard of you before or haven't listened to the shows before, would you just give us an outline of your academic and professional background so people can understand a little more about you, where you come from?
After studying humanities and teaching various things, I went back to graduate school in biology, specializing in physiology, in particular reproductive physiology in aging, and got my PhD with a thesis on that topic in 1972, and have been continuing to study related things. How the nervous system and endocrine system interact, and related to what the immune system is, and essentially, I don't think there is an immune system in the way we've been taught, based on the simple 19-8 version that got into the textbooks, based on a sharp division between training antibodies and having a simple, stupid, innate immune system. The brain and consciousness, emotions, everything, they're all integrated into the whole endocrine immune metabolic functions, and the simplification of the immune system has made it possible for the government to push people around, get them scared when there's absolutely no reason for panic. I've been tracing the ways that they seem to have led the public to fear that this was a super virulent virus when there was absolutely no evidence that it was anything special. Coronaviruses traditionally were associated with the common cold, but lab manipulations have been going on since the late 60s, and the weaponization, which was stopped by Nixon in 1969, was resumed under the disguise of creating weaponized viruses so that we could create a vaccine to treat the disease in case someone attacked us with a weaponized virus. So exactly the same weaponization has continued ever since Nixon canceled the project. In 2014, a lot of virologists even were pointing out how deadly it could be if the lab had leaks with these weaponized viruses. And so there was a moratorium put on continuing gain-of-function research in late 2014. And immediately the research was transported to Wuhan. Fauci was responsible for that move, violating the spirit of the moratorium, which was to prevent a pandemic. I think the information was put out letting the public know that weaponized viruses were circulating through labs all over the world, both the United States and China. And that information, regardless of what might turn out to be an infectious flu season event, having that discussion going on made it possible for the public to be scared by rumors of a weaponized virus, either from Wuhan or from Fort Detrick. And the government didn't have to put out any information about the deadliness of the virus. They just let the rumors create the panic, and then they took advantage of it to shut down the economy, which they had been discussing for at least a year in advance.
I mean, don't get me wrong, and I'm certainly aware that not everything is as it seems, and having a background in herbal medicine and knowing that there are alternatives available has always been part of my personality, to seek these things out rather than just taking it point blank that this is the only thing that you do for a given illness. It's never been my way of thinking, and so I've spent most of my life since graduating looking at alternative ways of doing things, and I find it very empowering and very refreshing, and it's certainly good for science's sake, because it gives medicine the chance to do their own research on this and to make it a valuable place, an environment, a healthy environment for people to live in, where there is more, always an alternative. And so what's been on my mind, Dr. Pete, since this began, and I think probably more so since the facts and figures came out about just how few people are actually dying from this compared to previous pandemics, and as more information has come out from German surgeons and German doctors doing research, doctors in this country who are blowing the whistle on various things that are happening in hospitals and the economic gains of hospitals to put people on ventilators has brought to light some of the news reported about how people are dying because they're ventilated when they shouldn't be ventilated, and how the CARES Act brought in funding for this to happen in terms of free money, and so the hospitals had a kind of a priority to do this in terms of capitalization, and the cover-up of people in hospital that weren't actually corona positive, that were called corona positive and mixed with known corona patients. And I think later on I want to give out a few links so people can check this for themselves, because I've also found that as time's gone on, especially in the last couple of years with the whole disinformation campaign, that Google is becoming increasingly more selective in terms of results over and above search engines that are not monetized per se and are not global, not dominating monopolistic kind of organizations that Google's definitely become. So there's always got to be room, and there always will be all the time we're alive, for alternatives and an alternative viewpoint. And I'd really appreciate that with you, that you're always looking even for science's sake, at science, you advocate good science and you debunk bad science, and that's always the best character for somebody who's truly doing research. So my main question, since this whole thing took off back in January, when we started hearing in February about what was happening in this country, and it kind of exploded in March and the lockdowns across California and New York and then the rest of the states, and all the numbers from the CDC and all the fear surrounding this, which is definitely what's driving it, because the facts do not seem to speak to allay that fear, but people interpret what's happening in terms of the media as a justification for everything that's happening, despite there not being the true evidence there. So if it's not anything like a 1918 pandemic where there's going to be 60 million people dead, because at this point it's actually, as you've said, and you know, you can bring this out in a moment, there's minimal numbers of people truly that are actually dying, and actually a lot of numbers have been mixed and lumped together as COVID when they're not, and that it really does, without being conspiracist, and this is the thing I think that the internet wants to try and shut down in terms of the fact-checking drive to dispute this, and people being kicked off of platforms that would normally be available for them to voice their opinion, because free speech is an enshrined part of the Constitution. The whole concept of bringing in a collapse of the economy with a World Bank, World Health Organization, you know, International Monetary Fund type restructuring to finally wrap up the world in a very dystopian and communistic type organization, leadership kind of, this does not sound too far from the truth, because I don't think anybody in power ever lets a good crisis go to waste. So in terms of the numbers of people that are dying, from what you know, compared to previous years, would you just outline to people listening just what the facts are, and so we can get a better perspective on this in terms of its seriousness as this show goes forward, with people blowing the whistle on things that are happening and as the months roll by, for people to get a perspective on it?
I was looking at the numbers of total deaths in the U.S., the numbers usually take about 2 weeks to fully get reported. So looking back a few months, everything but the last 2 weeks are usually pretty stable numbers, and I was seeing historically low numbers of total deaths in the United States for the last several months, and wondering how that was possible with a growing population and nothing special happening to the nature of the population that could be preventing death from all causes. I thought that was very suspicious. And then suddenly, just about the same number of deaths that hadn't occurred from all causes, suddenly the first week in April, they occurred very fast and gave a huge spike in excess mortality that was ascribed to the coronavirus by the CDC.
And those were also when the large amount of coronavirus deaths were being reported. In the month, like on April 17th, we had 2,638 deaths recorded as coronavirus deaths. So the largest number of deaths were mostly in April.
And this is worldometers.info, which is freely accessible on the Internet.
And in
so you're saying those are the excess deaths?
People individually have reported that their superiors in hospitals are ordering that the death or the sickness be put down as COVID. Where, for example, there's a video by Erin Olsuski. You can find it on the Internet. She had her cell phone made pictures of the records of people coming in, being tested twice, and found negative for the coronavirus, and then written down as confirmed positive, contrary to the tests. And she shortly after that resigned in frustration because she reported basically evidence that they were doing this, putting people without any deadly sickness coming into this public hospital, basically poor people, that the government was paying a base rate of $13,000 for respiratory disease just to be admitted, plus $6,000 extra by the CARES Act, the Free Money Act passed just for this pandemic. But that wasn't enough. The hospital would receive $48,000 total under this act if they put them on a ventilator. The nurse said that these people who weren't seriously sick mostly were just scared because they were having a respiratory sickness during what was said to be a dangerous pandemic. But every one of them put on the ventilator died, except one man who happened to be a drug addict who was insensitive to the drugs they knocked the people out with so they wouldn't respond to the tube down their breathing system. And he woke up under the anesthetic and pulled the tube out. He was the only one of her patients who survived.
Let me, Dr. Pete, sorry to interrupt you, but let me just let people know, because I only discovered this just a short time ago. For people that want to go and check this out, it's a little bit like the German Wolfgang Wodarg, who's saying the whole thing is ridiculous because the numbers just do not add up, a respected German doctor. There's been quite a few whistleblowers here. I mentioned last month the show that outlined the physician who was basically in tears at the amount of people dying on ventilators, saying that the recommendations from the CDC were killing people and no one was changing anything when that just you just had to look and you could see that patients weren't doing well, but yet nothing had been changed in terms of protocol. The person that Dr. Peach just described was a nurse called Erin Marie Olszewski. So she's Polish, and her last name is spelled Olszewski. So Erin Olszewski. And if you just type that in YouTube and you go to Perspectives on the Pandemic, she's basically an undercover whistleblower with a camera who's recording patient admittance charges, test results showing negative people that are then put in the same wards as positive people who later become positive, and everybody's getting ventilated, and it's another total disaster. And it's kind of hard to believe, but it's there to watch. And so in terms of people who want to talk about fact-checking, the facts, that's something that we want to and we always strive to do here on the shows. A lot of the things that we say might seem very controversial, but go check the facts. So, Dr. Pete, I was asking again about the numbers of people that have died. And I guess before I carry on with this, just let people know that this is Ask Your Herb Doctor on KMUD Galbraith, 91.1 FM. From 7:30 till the end of the show, you're invited to call in. The number is 707-923-3911 or 1-800-KMUD-RAD.
I want to mention one thing. Another error in the death recording numbers is that people that go to the hospital or have gone to the hospital during this pandemic, and I actually know someone personally that had this experience, as soon as they get to the hospital, they can't get out of their car. The nurse comes up to them and gives them a test for coronavirus. They're under coronavirus investigation, and they can't be admitted to the hospital until they clear as negative for coronavirus. If they test positive for coronavirus, obviously they get admitted to a different sector. But I know of two people that went there for separate conditions, not related to respiratory disease. And if those people would have been sent home and died, they would have been counted as a coronavirus death because they were under COVID-19
suspicion
investigation. So that's another error in the numbers if those people actually died.
And you would say, Dr. Peter, the numbers are actually seasonally low.
The total mortality was mysteriously low until April.
But even with those figures, aren't the numbers that we're looking at and seeing not what you would expect from a massively virulent and fatal, or, extremely...
Not at all. Someone with patience to sort through the confusing way the CDC has begun putting out the numbers, they calculated from the figures they could find on the CDC and saw that their numbers corresponded very closely to the numbers found by the three Stanford professors in March, who said that it was in the vicinity of 1/4 of 1% mortality, not very different from ordinary flu.
Right.
Back in March and April. But that doesn't, what matters is what the media is telling people, because this research can be done. And like you said, Dr. Pete, as well, you went on the CDC website and you calculated the figures and the total death. That means people who died from anything in the U.S. during the months of January, February, March were actually surprisingly low. That stuff needs to be reported to the media. The media needs to be saying that stuff, but they're not.
They're reporting a second wave
and all this fear-mongering because they obviously have an agenda. You just have to follow the money.
A guy who normally writes politically extremist columns did that same counting. Joe Hoft was his name, reported just about what I said. And I looked him up, and all of the best-known fact-checking sites were lying, saying that... he was making up his numbers. So I started looking at other things that the fact-checking sites were saying. And they, like the mass media, were following the claims of whatever the CDC says,
right.
and saying that anything that criticizes it is a conspiracy theory that shouldn't be taken seriously. Right. But looking at the top medical magazines, I noticed in I think it was mid-March, Lancet had an article by three Swiss lung specialists warning people not to do what the Chinese had found protective, not to give them angiotensin receptor blockers, because they said the angiotensin the ACE 2 angiotensin converting enzyme number 2 was the receptor, and if you increase that receptor, which the blockers do, they were saying you would make yourself more susceptible to infection. But they were exactly contradicting several studies by Chinese and others that, in fact, the blockers were curative. And the whole nature of the sickness, when it actually occurs, it isn't a lung disease. It's a systemic inflammatory disease. You've heard it as a cytokine storm. The virus doesn't discriminate. It can infect the intestine as well as the respiratory system. When the intestine gets infected and inflamed, that is the common basis of a cytokine storm. And two doctors very early were agreeing with the basic Chinese studies that it isn't primarily a lung impairment caused by the virus. It's a systemic inflammation resembling altitude sickness. And the treatments for altitude sickness are anti-inflammatory and happen to be therapeutic along with the angiotensin receptor blockers. Everything anti-inflammatory is therapeutic, but the leading journals have been directing the public and doctors away from the proven therapeutic things. And just if you look up Lancet scandal more recently.
Lancet scandal, did you say?
Yeah, Lancet scandal.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll find that a study supposedly based on a huge amount of data said that hydroxychloroquine was killing vast numbers of people based on data from 100,000 patients from all around the world. A Harvard professor was the lead author, but it turned out that the data was made up out of thin air, and the company responsible for the data refuses to let anyone audit their computer to see where the numbers came from. The editor of Lancet is saying that the peer review system didn't fail. They can't deal with fraud. But basically, they publish something that is politically popular with them.
Yeah.
They publish according to the results they like and don't look critically at impossible statistics or likely fraud.
Is that because they want to sell the vaccine?
Basically, yeah. They don't want a treatable sickness. If you can cure it overnight with aspirin and losartan and carbonic anhydrase inhibitors and calcium channel blockers, so-called, those are all available cheap drugs, and they happen to work. Hydroxychloroquine, which is basically harmless but not quite as effective as the others. It helps a little bit, so it's nothing to be discouraged. Having good results in some studies, just not as powerful results as the anti-inflammatories.
Well, at least the White House press secretary keeps mentioning that it's now treatable when she's asked by the press. She doesn't just mention vaccines, but which haven't been developed, obviously, yet, working on it. But she does mention that coronavirus is treatable, and that's hopeful. Hopefully, mass media will publicize that.
I don't think so, but anyway. So you're listening to Ask Europe, Dr. Kamie de Garderville, 91.1 FM, from 7:30 now until the end of the show at 8 o'clock. You're invited to call in with any questions. Dr. Raymond Peet is our guest speaker today, and we are discussing the ongoing coronavirus myths and facts and the way through this. So the number, if you live in the area or if you don't live in the area, 1-800-KMUD-RAD or 707-923-3911. So, Dr. Peet, that begs a question. If they introduced the lockdown before there was any information on how serious or not, as we're contesting the situation was, or it was at the time, was going to become, etc. If they initiated that lockdown before they even knew how serious it was, doesn't that beg the question that the pumps were primed for this to happen, and that if this is not as bad at all from the figures of people dying, even with bloated figures from people that were not coronavirus positive that are being reported by doctors around the world in hospital ER settings, as well as other evidence from researchers that are looking at the mortality figures and the general dynamics of this epidemic, that the final game, supposedly, I mean, we can get into this as well, but I know we've looked at it and spoken a little in the past about the whole funding of vaccine development and how, Bill Gates's pre-preparation for world epidemics was being set in terms of the stage for viruses that were known or created would have a vaccine available for them, for the willing population of the world, which is a very big, large, mass consumer product, just like computers, would be very profitable. Doesn't it beg the question that if this thing is not that serious and it's wrecking the economy of the world, I'm not too sure about China's, but that's another subject because I don't know how much information is coming out of China to believe. But if the economies of the world are being destroyed and people are being unemployed and out of work and they are getting desperate, then the only end game seems to me to be some kind of restructuring of society, and I fear that this is a kind of dystopian outlook.
Have a caller, too.
That's all become public now. It's no longer an undercover conspiracy theory. The big powers have announced it. For example, May last year, the National Defense Commission on Artificial Intelligence, led by the chairman, Eric Schmidt, a former Google chief executive, this is a Pentagon commission, describing how the economy can be turned very quickly over to an artificial intelligence system, automation, getting rid of small businesses and workers and all of the middle class and unnecessary workers, so that the great corporations can manage things more efficiently through artificial intelligence. That was the program outlined by the Commission on Artificial Intelligence.
And we have a caller.
What?
And there's a caller, too, when you're ready.
Let's take this. I'll kind of remind you where you were in that thread, though. But, Dr. Peet, okay. We have a caller on the end. Let's take this caller away from. What's your question?
Hi, I'm from New York, and I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. My question for Dr. Pete is, there's a woman who's in her 60s, and she has digital necrosis. So it's her index finger, it started to get cold. That whole arm started to get numb, and then the tip of the finger died back, and it's died back to just about where the nail bed begins. And I was wondering what kind of things you would recommend. I did give her L-arginine because I thought maybe it was a Raynaud's kind of thing. What would you recommend, I guess, for healing that tissue?
I think a thorough measurement of all of her hormones, all of the inflammatory system can cause a vasoconstriction. You'd want to check angiotensin itself and estrogen and the balance of the adrenaline system. But behind that, the stabilizing...
Oh, I'm sorry, I can't hear Dr. Pete on my phone.
The most stabilizing factors that lower those inflammatory transmitters are a good high ratio of calcium to phosphate in the diet, and vitamin D, and progesterone and thyroid as things that lower the whole inflammatory circulatory problem.
So a high calcium and low phosphate diet would include things like fruits and vegetables and dairy for your protein rather than a high consumption of phosphate-rich
low
beans,
legumes,
and
grains,
meat,
and
legumes.
Would there be anything topically, like you had mentioned in the past, perhaps something like carbon dioxide gas?
Putting your hand in a bag of pure carbon dioxide, it helps get it relaxes blood vessels and helps deliver oxygen and anti-inflammatory effect to the local tissues. It penetrates very quickly.
And I had heard you say once before that nitric oxide is possibly problematic, but I had heard that the L-arginine increases nitric oxide to dilate the blood vessels and help to get circulation.
Carbon dioxide safely dilates them.
Okay.
And
nitric oxide is very inflammatory.
Okay.
The carbonic anhydrase inhibitors that can be used systemically. Same thing for altitude sickness. It restores oxygen delivery in the proper way. But with your hand, you can put your bag into pure carbon dioxide, and that's much easier than taking a pill.
Great. Thank you so much for taking the call.
And we have another caller,
and
too.
From the herbal perspective, prickly ash bark and ginger tea helps to dilate peripheral blood vessels.
So, Dr. P., let me first ask Michael. Michael, do we have any more callers on the line?
They just dropped, but somebody else is calling in right now.
Okay. All right. We'll take this next caller before we continue with Eric Schmidt's campaign.
Here we've got the caller.
Okay.
Okay, caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? What's your question?
Portland, Oregon. And so my question is regards with selenium for thyroid. How do you get it? How much do you take? What are signs of a deficiency?
Selenium for thyroid. Dr.
Selenium?
P, like sources are oysters and shellfish have selenium, mushrooms. And Dr. P, can you talk about the symptoms of selenium deficiency?
Any seafood will give you adequate selenium if you eat it once or twice a week. And that's essential for thyroid.
Can you expound on any specific deficiencies, or would it just be seen as a low thyroid?
any kind of stress can bring on an attack of hypothyroidism, depression, or stress. Defensively cools your metabolism by knocking out the thyroid function momentarily. And in that case, sugar, fruit juice, a big glass of orange juice, for example, can bring a person out of this momentary hypothyroidism.
And we have one more caller.
Let's take this next caller. Let's see where we go with this one. Caller, you're on the air. What's your question, and where are you from?
I'm from New York. Dr. Pete, you just talked about CO2, and I was just wondering. I know someone who has used bags on not just one arm but four arms, and put it on there for several hours, and a lot of moisture comes into the bag, so I'm guessing that that's an indication that they either have high nitric oxide or what I think you've heard use the term disorganized water. But this person did this three kind of days in a row, and it wasn't until the third day when the moisture, you know, was less, you know, after that same time period. I was just wondering, what actually is going on here, and, like, is disorganized water something that you have to deal with literally every 24 hours, because this person is doing it 3 days in a row and still getting large amounts of it? Or is this something that might be unique to this person and their physiology? This is an older person, over 60.
What specifically about, did you say organized water?
No, I was talking about CO2 in a bag. You mentioned it just a moment ago on the call. And what I was saying is, I know someone who did it on all four limbs at night for several hours, and each night the bag filled, all four packs filled up with water, incredible size, incredible volume. So I would think if you had disorganized water and you did that for a long period of time once, that the next night it would not be as significant in terms of volume. But there was volume 3 days in a row. So I'm wondering what is going on there physiologically, you know, when that much water continues to come out. Is that something you'd expect?
It's relaxing blood vessels near the surface, and that's perfectly normal. You're putting out water in your breath and through your skin, and all you have to do is keep drinking juice or milk or something, because it's just letting the natural evaporation come, and it's energizing your skin to some extent, but mostly the effect is just from causing a flushing, opening up of blood vessels.
Right. Okay. One other question. Four vitamins, I think you're really big on, are vitamin D, thyroid, progesterone, and DHEA, both for men and women. For DHEA, it's kind of hard to find a good product. So with the progesterone, small amounts for men, if you have that in vitamin E, could you take like a pure DHEA, maybe just like 2-3 milligrams, like half of a 5-milligram capsule?
Yeah,
and like mix it in with the progesterone, with the vitamin E that comes in, so that way it's cheaper. It's a cheaper way to do it. I'm just wondering if you think that's okay.
When they're in balance, it's safe to take a small amount of DHEA.
Oh, you're saying, you mean 1-to-1 ratio?
Depends on your thyroid. A very low thyroid person wouldn't want to, in any case, take more than 5 or 10 milligrams of DHEA, where they might want to take 20 or 30 milligrams of progesterone.
I see. Okay. And one last question on a dog with a respiratory problem, not coronavirus, but they had an oral problem, and then they seem to have very difficult breathing. So I'm thinking that the liquid went down into the lungs and caused real serious respiratory, perhaps bacterial infection. So one antibiotic that's been I've been using is amoxicillin, but I've heard that maybe azithromycin or doxycycline might be better as well. I'm just trying to think if you
The best results are in France in particular. We're being produced by azithromycin, which is anti-inflammatory, and the tetracyclines are anti-inflammatory too. So it isn't the antibiotic effect you're getting. It's the very effective anti-inflammatory effect of both azithro or erythromycin and doxy or tetracycline.
Gotcha. Okay. And one last marketing question on your newsletter. If someone were to sign up now, like over the next week, would they still get the issue? I think you were writing an issue literally on the coronavirus and some of the physiological aspects.
You can ask for any number of back issues you want as a starting point.
Okay, great. Super. Thanks very much for your time.
Okay.
Thank you. Be cool.
I want to say that Pure Encapsulations makes a very good DHEA that's available in 5 and 10 milligrams, which it's hard to find in that low quantity. So Pure Encapsulations is a pretty pure product if you're interested in a 5 or 10 milligram DHEA.
So, engineer, do we have any other callers waiting? Or
no, some people have tried to call, but I can't hear anything.
Okay.
So it's all you.
Okay, the number if you want to call in for the show until 8 o'clock here is 1-800-KMUD-RAD or 707-923-3911. So, Dr. Pete, you were expounding on Eric Schmidt, ex-CEO.
I was mentioning the proposal of this Pentagon Commission last May to destroy the economy, the old economy, to create a new one very quickly. Currently, just a couple of weeks ago, Governor Cuomo of New York invited him, and he appeared with Bill Gates, I hear, at one of their press conferences to take over changing New York's economy in line with what the commission proposed the previous year to replace ordinary education with remote schooling and to transition into telemedicine rather than direct contact where people can catch infections from the doctor and so on, and to change the economy towards online businesses rather than real businesses.
What are they going to do about the high unemployment rate?
But
once that happens,
that will work into the other part of the plan, which the sponsors, along with Bill Gates, of a meeting last October called the Event 201, I think it was in New York, where they got world leaders from all of the major businesses and governments and health organizations, especially drug companies, to enact a play version of on the script that a coronavirus had been transmitted from a South American bat to a pig and it got transmitted into the United States and threatened to kill 65 million people. So they were going through what they would do to protect the population from this super deadly coronavirus. That was acted out. You can find it on the internet, Event 201. in October of last year, and the World Economic Forum, one of the sponsors of that meeting, has already announced their theme for next January's meeting, which is the Great Reset, which is seeing the world economy as reduced to basically a third world level of sustainable agriculture and everything sustainable, but without the present industry and so on, which they're going to save the world from pollution at the same time as from the virus. They specifically said that the virus is a great addition to the planetary warming, which they were already planning to change the economy to prevent planetary warming, but very conveniently the pandemic let them accelerate it by years.
And then, like you said, with Eric Schmidt's proposal to use artificial intelligence and insert that into finances and structuring society, that would seem to give us that dystopian nightmare of George Orwell's 1984 and worse.
And Cuomo.
Oh my goodness.
But what are they going to do with all the unemployed people? Are they going to then plan mass euthanization?
Well, it's been known for a long time that every percent of increased unemployment causes tens of thousands of people to die additionally every year from sickness, suicide, alcoholism, murder, accidents. And so if you have 20% unemployed, just things like suicide and sickness will increase hugely, several times faster than the virus could kill them.
And we have a couple callers. I told them they're going to have to be very quick because we're almost at the end of the show.
Yeah, well, let's take this next caller, Michael, and then let's see here. Let's give it 4 minutes to the top of the hour. Let's stop any more incoming, and then I need to let people know how to get a hold of Dr. Pete, and want to mention some other products here that people can use if they do get influenza of some type.
So we've got the caller.
Caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? What's your question?
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Okay, this is Greg Condon. I'm from Salmon Creek. The other day I heard two interesting ideas that I wish you would comment on. One was the symptoms, the advanced symptoms of COVID seemed, these high altitude type of sicknesses, was very similar to cyanide poisoning, and that the treatments for cyanide poisoning were fairly well known. And the second interesting factor was that in the advanced stages of like cyanide poisoning, where oxygen needs to get in the lungs, that putting high pressure purified oxygen or enhanced oxygen was actually detrimental to the tissue at that point. Those are my two things I wish you'd comment on.
Yeah,
Doctor, did you hear that question?
High purity oxygen is exactly the wrong thing. That's the people who fail to adapt to high altitude and develop the sickness suffer from the same basic inflammatory conditions that the people who contract coronavirus are already suffering from. Basically, a stress state, a hypothyroid state in which the tissues are not producing carbon dioxide, but instead are producing lactic acid. That could be an overlap point with cyanide. Suffocation will make you produce lactic acid, and lactic acid organizes things like pulmonary edema and systemic inflammation.
And here we have our last caller who promised to be quick.
Okay, Paula, you're on the air. What's your question, and where are you from?
I'm from Mendocino. and my question is about leg cramps. I do a lot of bicycling to control my type 2 diabetes, and but I get pretty severe leg cramps after the ride, not during riding, but after. And what could I do to deal with that?
You say exercise brings it on?
Yeah, he said he doesn't get lactic acid cramps while he's cycling, but sometime after stopping during recovery, he gets these cramps.
Dehydration, just not having enough blood volume, drinking water or juice or milk or anything to bring up your blood volume quickly. The concentration of the blood increases the pH, and increased pH causes muscle and nerve spasms and increases the production of lactic acid. So lactic acid is being produced just because you don't have enough blood volume. It doesn't have to be an alkaline drink or acidic drink or anything. You want to restore the volume, and that will lower the alkalosis, which is causing the cramps.
All right. Thank you very much.
So rehydration. Great. Thanks for your call. But we better stop taking calls there, Dr. P, and call the show good for this month and let people know how to reach you. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. So for those who've listened to the show, I did want to mention several products that are definitely useful for the whole cytokine storm part of this particular influenza, if you do get it, and you get into any kind of respiratory distress. Ephedra is an herb, mahuang, that was banned here in the States because it was being abused by diet supplement companies. It's been shown to be extremely effective, not just in Asia and China, but with other third-party research in Europe that's been done where it's not banned. Ephedra has been shown to very, very well mitigate some of the problems with respiratory complications of COVID. And then, obviously, glycyrrhizin is a product in licorice which has been shown to bind specifically to the high mobility box group 1 component and provide relief from respiratory distress. Other herbs like Baikal skullcap, things that have been traditionally used for influenza like wild indigo, pleurisy root. Obviously, things like echinacea and elderberry do work well for this type of influenza, but there's a controversy surrounding cytokine storm and the use of elderberry. But traditionally, these immune supportives have been used where there's no danger of an exaggerated immune response in the cytokine storm. So thanks so much for joining us, Dr. P. And I would encourage people to look at YouTube videos of people that are blowing the whistle in hospital situations for patients that are being called COVID-19 when they're not. That interview or that YouTube from Erin Olszewski, Olszewski, type her name in, Perspectives on the Pandemic, very, very eye-opening. Look at Wolfgang Wodarg's publications, a respected German scientist, and just look at the figures and look at what the option or the alternative is and just ask yourself the question, if it's so bad, why are there not so many more people dying? If the figures are bloated as they are because of the numbers of people that are being rolled into one and called COVID-19 dependent, and then ask yourself the question, where's the money? We'll follow the trail. Until the third Friday of next month, my name's Andrew Murray.
My name's Sarah Johannesson Murray. Thank you for joining us.
Good night.
Good night.
Camwood would like to thank our underwriters, Humboldt Brand, with decades of knowledge in cultivation and extraction, representing over 100 local farms, offering compliance consultation, branding and packaging design, increased distribution channels, manufacturing and networking events. Humboldt Brand is your local team located at 823 Redwood Drive in Garberville. For more information, their number is 923-9560 or info at thehumboldtbrand.com. By farmers for farmers, it is 8 o'clock. This is Redwood Community Radio, KMED Garberville, KMUE Eureka, KLAI Laytonville.